It has shocked the WWE Universe. Changed the face of WWE. And now, it is back. The 2011 WWE Draft.
It's time to shake things up again!
And I have half the brain that you do!
What?
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Hello, everybody. Yes, WWE shakes things up again, and TNA is in a sticky situation with Desmond Wolfe. Hello everyone, I'm James McDonald, and you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. We're coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, and I'm joined with my good friend and colleague, Corey Callahan. How are you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing all right, James. The WWE Draft, it's come and gone.
Well, it definitely has, and we have a great show for you tonight. We're going to go over the 2011 Draft that happened on Monday Night Raw in our Tale of the Tape segment. And we're also going to bring you up to date with everything that's happening in the world of wrestling news in our coast-to-coast report. And like always, we have our top five.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting week on the business side of things. The WWE held their annual stockholders meeting today. And definitely some interesting news came out of that.
Also on tonight's show, we're going to preview tomorrow night's ECCW show, Chamber of Extreme. And we're also going to bring you up to date with what's happening all the promotions in the Vancouver area and our local wrestling scene segment. And of course, don't forget about our poll question.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's dive into the WWE Draft in our Tale of the Tape segment.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
Alright, so Monday Night Raw came to us from Raleigh, North Carolina, and it was the 2011 Draft. Always fun. And to start off the show, they threw us right into the thick of things with a 20-man battle royal. No intros, no entrances, yeah. No nothing. That seemed kind of weird, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm a huge fan of how that show started out.
No, I don't like when they do that, when they just throw you right into things like that. But anyways, yeah, they started off with a 20-man battle royal with the winner getting 2 draft picks, I think I heard them say.
Yeah, again, you know, we kind of poke fun at the draft here at the beginning of the show. I mean, the thing that bothers me, James, is that this has such potential to be such a great show, and I don't know if they delivered on it tonight.
No, you know what? I got to agree with you there. I think they kind of fell underneath the bar a little bit. But anyways, I'm not going to go into too much detail about the Battle Royal. I will tell you there were some funny spots, like with Santino and the Big Show. Did you like how Big Show kind of turned the Cobra around on Santino there and then eliminated him with it?
Absolutely. I mean, the Battle Royals. I mean, the other thing is we just saw a Battle Royal on SmackDown on Friday before. But interesting way to start the show, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems to me like they're, you know, riding by the fly of their pants here lately.
I think that's sort of the given that's happening in the, you know, the last little while. I mean, it's, post-WrestleMania lull.
I guess so. But, yeah, and then, of course, we had the great colleague with his, multiple man thrown over the top rope spot. And
one thing that I definitely liked in this Battle Royal was a nice catch by the Big Show with Evan Bourne, and he threw him outside of the ring.
Yeah,
how he eliminated Evan Bourne.
That was very impressive.
That was impressive. There. But anyway, SmackDown wins. They get 2 draft picks, Courtesy of Big Show and Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, Big Show and Kofi Kingston were the two SmackDown competitors that were left in the ring at the end of the match. And interestingly enough, Mason Ryan, last Raw competitor in the Battle Royal.
They're definitely giving Mason Ryan a bit of a push. You can see that happening. If it sticks or not, that's yet to be seen. The one thing you have to remember, James, is we have not seen Mason Ryan really on the mic much. I mean, he's got the look. I mean, he's Batista the second.
That's pretty much why I think they're pushing him, is because he's got that big guy look that Vince just, you know, absolutely loves, right?
Yeah.
But anyways,
I don't know. Well, it's yet to be determined. But we get to the first draft pick, and you know, we get the awesome music, we get the graphics of the different wrestlers' faces.
Yeah, now you know what? I was actually kind of excited to see who the first draft pick was going to be, and
who is it? None other than John Cena.
Just like the opening clip showed you there, yeah, it was John Cena being drafted to SmackDown. Which,
what are your thoughts on this initially when you first saw this, James?
I thought my initial thoughts were they're scrambling. They're scrambling because of Edge having to retire so quickly and get out of the picture so fast due to his injury, due to the complications.
They need some star power on SmackDown. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely it's obvious at this point that the ratings are not exactly what they can be.
Well, they're never as good as Raw, anyways, right?
In my opinion, the reason for that is because the show is not live. There are advantages and disadvantages to SmackDown. Number one, if there's a mistake in the ring, if there's a mistake on the show, they can cut it out because everyone knows, at least you should know, that SmackDown happens on a Tuesday and airs on a Friday. So they have 3 days to get their act together with the show, and if there's a mistake, they can fix it.
If there's any garbage, they can throw it out, essentially.
The disadvantage to not being live, though, is that you're not live, and that essence of having a live show is lost with SmackDown. Mm-hmm. It gives the newer superstars an opportunity to get better and not worry so much about something wrong.
Yeah.
But again, the fans realize that it's not live, and you definitely can't see that in their production.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyways, after John Cena is announced as the first draft pick, we go to him and Todd Grisham in the back. Actually, before that, we kind of see... Did you see the SmackDown side? They were doing the "You Can't See Me" hand. They were all doing the
"You Can't." When you see the wrestlers in the dressing
room. Yeah, when you see the wrestlers in the dressing room.
I don't understand this. After they draft John Cena, they then cut backstage to all the wrestlers in their SmackDown and Raw t-shirts,
God,
and divided into different groups, and they're sitting in chairs and they're cheering. Like, the SmackDown side is cheering that they have John Cena. I'm sorry, but that doesn't make sense to me. Do you not think if you are on SmackDown and John Cena is being drafted to your brand, like, are you really applauding that? Or are you not thinking, well, there goes my camera time?
Even the heels were applauding it.
That whole thing, to me, doesn't make sense.
No.
There's holes in the way they broadcast this draft, and that's one of them. I don't think Yoshitatsu should be applauding John Cena coming over to his brand.
No. I agree.
Like, I get the FaceTime, and I get the fact that they're trying to create that backstage environment, but it's just not working for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, so anyways, John Cena cuts this just absolutely ridiculous promo. Like, every promo that he cuts now is just... You can tell he's marketed...
Gearing up for the crowd, or for the kids?
Yeah, marketed towards the kids, because his promos are just so god-awful cheesy.
Again, I think back in the day when I was a kid and I was listening to some of those promos, and I really did believe in them, I think the kids are believing in John Cena. I think he probably is a good role model for them all. I mean, I'm not disagreeing when John Cena says he has built an audience based on kids. And I think that is good. I think you do need that.
Well, this is how I see it. He's like, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, I'll admit, I was a Hulk maniac. Mm-hmm. I loved Hulk Hogan. And John Cena is essentially this generation's Hulk Hogan. He's the larger-than-life hero that the kids look up to, right?
Yeah, but you are setting yourself up to be booed out of the building at WrestleMania 27 or 28, don't you think?
Yeah.
So we then come to, you know, Miz cuts him off, actually. He interrupts John Cena and he says, "You know, John, for the first time, you're right. I can't see you when it comes to Raw."
I got a good laugh out of that.
That was a good line. I mean, that's something that the Miz capitalized on, and he definitely delivered in that segment. We then go to R-Truth, who comes out to address the crowd.
Well, actually, they played a video before that of R-Truth's heel turn last week on Raw.
Just to remind you of what happened last week.
Just in case you forgot or something. But
the one thing worth mentioning here is that R-Truth now is coming out to boos as opposed to applause. He's no longer the good guy. He is now the bad guy. And I have to say, James, this has totally rejuvenated his career.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I am really liking this new heel R-Truth.
When I think back on R-Truth, in the independents, he was a heel. And he played it well. He was never a face.
Well, he was
probably
like
a face at one point, but from what I remember, he was not a good guy.
Well, he was a heel like 10 years ago when he was wrestling for TNA, wasn't he?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's been a long time since I've gone back and looked at TNA R-Truth footage.
But the funny thing about this R-Truth segment is he comes out, and he's got kind of a mixed reaction when he initially comes out, and he goes for the cheap pop. He goes, "What's up, Raleigh, North Carolina?" And of course, you get the pop from the crowd. Everybody cheers. And then he goes, "Shut up." And instantly, everybody starts booing him. And right away, I am loving this R-Truth.
Well, I think it works. I think it works. They've definitely developed a new heel in the company. And I think if they play it properly, they do have potential on the hand. I mean, he's got the look. He got the. I'm not the wrestling ability, I'm not sold on yet. But maybe that'll come down the road. But again, they're giving him an opportunity to develop this heel character, and at this point, I think it's working.
And another thing I really like about this is the psychology of his heel turn was done really well, because when he comes out, he blames the fans. He blames the fans for...
A lot of wrestlers do that, though, when they turn heel.
Well, it kind of made sense in this aspect, because, of course, last week, John Morrison came out and essentially duped him.
Yeah.
And, and this week he comes out and he says he blames the fans. He says, you shouldn't be booing me. It's you that should be booed.
Yeah. Well,
it's your fault I accepted that match, so it's your fault I lost.
I've seen it before. But
I like it. I don't know. I like it.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I do like the R-Truth heel turn. I think it is saving him, honestly. On the eve of these talent cuts that are coming, I think it really has possibly saved him, because I was done with R-Truth. Like, if I had to hear him say "What's up" one more time to the crowd, I think I would have turned.
God,
the
he
channel.
Better lose that "What's up" now that he's a heel. I tell you.
Oh, I think he will for sure.
Right, yeah.
We then get to Eve Torres versus. Hold on. Well, actually, yes.
Yeah, you're right. We actually Morrison came out from behind after he finished his little cutting his little promo on the crowd. There, Morrison comes out, attacks him from behind. Ref split him up.
Yeah,
is there going to be an R-Truth John Morrison?
The one argument that I had with that whole segment is, John Morrison, your punches are so weak.
Yes, it's
if
terrible.
You're going to come out and attack a guy from behind like you did with R-Truth, make it look believable. Don't jump on top of him and just
weak strikes just ruin it. It's tough to believe at that point. It's really hard to suspend your disbelief when the strikes look so weak and you're like barely connecting. You're just brushing him with the tip of your knuckles. I don't know. It doesn't work for me.
No, it doesn't work for me either. Yeah. We then get to Eve Torres versus Layla at this point. And the only thing worth mentioning here is what happens mid-match. The match itself was actually quite good, I thought. It wasn't terrible. And the other thing worth mentioning in this match is that it is for a draft pick. I guess all the matches here tonight are for draft
picks. All the matches tonight were for draft picks.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing, but, it's an odd way of doing it.
So, anyways, this farce of a match was about 30 seconds.
And then Michael Cole interrupts the match.
Michael Cole interrupts. But before that happens, Eve wins with a roll-up on Layla. And they're kind of building more now upon the tension between Laycool.
Yeah, well, they're definitely splitting those two apart, and I think they're doing it superbly. I mean, this whole crying gimmick that Layla has, I'm definitely down for. I mean, she's not the best-looking crier, I have to give you that.
It did kind of look kind of fake, but...
But it is working. I mean, it's like what girls do when they have a fight, basically. Yeah. I mean, I look at my girlfriend and her friends, if they were ever to get into a fight, that's exactly how it would go down. They're just making it over the top. They're embellishing it for the wrestling audience. And I think they're doing an excellent job, and they should ride it out for a little while and see what happens from there. It'll be interesting to see what happens when those two actually do break up. But,
Yeah, moving on. Anyways, Eve Torres wins the match. So we got another draft pick for Raw now.
And this was a very interesting, well, this is actually a draft pick to SmackDown.
No, this is a draft pick to Raw.
Oh, that's right. Well, I wrote down SmackDown. Yeah.
Eve Torres is wrestling for Raw. So anyways, the draft pick ends up being Rey Mysterio.
Which was very interesting. I was not seeing that coming. But I did bring up a good question at this point when we did witness Rey Mysterio going to Raw. I did bring up a good question, which we'll get to a little later. I think there's a reasoning behind why Rey Mysterio is coming to Monday Night Raw. I mean, are we excited that he's coming to Raw? Probably not.
Well, you got to remember the last time he was on Raw, it wasn't anything special.
We've seen it before. That's why
he had
that
underwhelming feud with Kane, right? Last time he was on Raw.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where Ray goes from here. I mean, I think there are potential for some good feuds with other guys. Who those are, yet to be determined.
After Ray's announced as the next draft pick, we cut to a little scene before the commercial where we see Jim Ross warming up for his match that he's having with Michael Cole later on in the show.
This is interesting.
Oh, if you've ever seen Jim Ross do jumping jacks, it's sight to see. All I gotta say is,
I don't know if this is Jim Ross. I don't know if this is Vince McMahon's attempt at getting a little dig in on Jim Ross.
Oh, it's got to be.
Because why would you do that? Why would you make a guy like Jim Ross
he's just making
do jumping jacks
so
in front of everyone?
Yeah, I don't know.
This has got to be a little dig. I mean, I think that Vince McMahon can't deny the talent and he just brings so much to the WWE. Jim Ross, that is. He brings so much to the WWE. I think Vince realizes that, but for whatever reason, they have this little personal vendetta with each other, and I think this is just... I don't know for sure, but yeah. I think this is something between those two, and you know, Vince is kind of just poking fun at JR by making him do jumping jacks in front of the crowd.
Yeah, they've got a messed up relationship.
We then get to Kofi Kingston versus... Oh no, we actually get to Cody Rhodes with Todd Grisham.
Yeah, this is a neat little vignette.
Yeah, he cuts a good little promo against Rey Mysterio with the news that Rey is going to Raw. I gotta admit, I think Cody Heel is on the verge of superstardom here. I think this new character, this mask, this gimmick of him wearing the hood over his hood.
But you know what? I liked the dashing gimmick.
Yeah, I did too. I think
I really liked the dashing gimmick.
I like everything he's done. When he was with Ted DiBiase, I liked it.
He's been solid. He's been solid through and through, in my opinion.
I think the WWE knows that. They know they've got a potential superstar on their hands.
Yep.
And they're just, at this point,
milking
it for everything it's worth.
Dusty Rhodes' son.
Oh, exactly.
You can even hear it in his voice. He's kind of got that lisp like Dusty Rhodes has, right?
We then get to Kofi versus Sheamus. And here's my first problem with Kofi versus Sheamus.
Another match for a draft pick, too?
Yes, but that's not my issue. My issue is we've already seen Kofi wrestle tonight. He wrestled in the Battle Royal at the beginning, and now he's coming out for a one-on-one match against Sheamus.
Not only that, I think he worked Sunday night in Europe, too. So I think he worked Sunday night in Europe, got on a plane, flew to Raleigh.
Well, I'm sure a lot of those people
have
done that.
And then that's pretty brutal, though.
That's the lifestyle
that's the life of a wrestler, I guess. I mean,
no, that's the biggest complaint that some of the wrestlers have is the workload.
That is a kind of a hectic travel. I mean, God, being in Europe, working, and then coming over and working two matches in the States the next night.
Kofi wins with Trouble in Paradise. And then we get to the draft pick, which is really the most important part. That's the funny thing about these matches is that the matches don't mean anything. It's what happens after the match that means something, which... I don't know. Is that really what you're going out and fighting for that night? You're putting your body on the line for your brand's draft pick? I mean, again, something that doesn't make sense to me with this whole WWE draft.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, and there. I mean, we see the wrestlers, you know, transversing brands all the time, too.
Yeah. But the important thing that happened here is...
SmackDown gets another draft pick.
And who is it?
It's Randy Orton, the Viper, Randy Orton, making his way over to the Blue Show.
Which is not really a surprise. I'm pretty sure you called that last week.
I called
week,
that
James.
Last, absolutely, yeah.
But the funny part about this is he comes out of the entranceway. This is the thing. When everyone gets drafted, they come out into the entranceway.
And they have to wear a freaking t-shirt just to signify.
So someone throws a t-shirt at Randy Orton that says it was a SmackDown shirt. And he looks at it, and he doesn't put it on. And I'm pretty sure he mouths the word... It's a medium. And he doesn't put it on at first, which is funny. He's just holding the shirt in his hands, and I'm thinking, oh, God, someone threw him the wrong size t-shirt. That would have been hilarious. He actually does put it on, but they cut away first, so I'm not sure if they threw him a new shirt.
I'm guaranteeing they threw him a new shirt.
Yeah. We then go to Michael Cole, who walks out with Jack Swagger, of course. And Cole's wearing a singlet and headgear.
Just like at WrestleMania 27.
Yeah, and he walks out of the entranceway for his match against Jim Ross, of course. And the funny thing that I have to laugh at here, James, is that they announced Cole as Sir Michael
Sir
Cole.
Sir Michael Cole,
They're really playing off that
gimmick. They're going to play on that. And you know how disgusting he looks in that orange gimmick.
Oh, he's terrible.
So
terrible.
You know what that means? That means that WWE is going to give us him in an orange singlet every other week, right?
Is that something the fans want to see him?
Of course not. I don't want to see it. But
no. But the anyways, it's Cole versus JR. The match gets thrown out in the end because Swagger He took out Lawler, and then he took out Jim Ross. And Michael Cole, who's actually bloody at this point.
Yeah, he actually got busted up for real there.
Yeah, he takes off JR's belt, and he starts strapping him like a leather with the leather belt. And that's got to hurt. There's no way of staging that one. I think no. That hurts. No,
so anyways,
what.
Yeah, Lawler comes in. He makes the save. Kind of clotheslines, disgusting-looking clothesline over the top rope on Jack Swagger. And then he grabs the belt, and he grabs Michael Cole as he's trying to climb out of the ring, drags him back, starts whipping him with the belt. And then, of course, we hear the familiar iPhone text message chime, and it's the Raw Anonymous General Manager. Like
Josh Matthews is answering this email.
Like we give a crap anymore. Come on now.
Well, the Raw GM or Josh Matthews?
Both.
I like Josh Matthews. I totally disagree
with
you there.
I like Josh Matthews.
I do.
Too.
But his email says the match at Extreme Rules against, with Lawler and JR versus Cole and Swagger, it's not going to be a normal match. It's going to be a tag team country whipping match.
Country whipping match.
That makes... no one knows what that is. I'm assuming it's a leather strap match they're going to be
like
strapping each other.
Well, no, they're going to be strapped to each other, right?
They're both going to be given a leather strap
that they can just flail
at each other?
I think they're going to be strapped to each other because that's why Ross didn't get his hand casted up. Because he actually did kind of, I think, break his knuckle or something, didn't he?
Yeah, there were reports that he did actually hurt his knuckle in this match. Actually, apparently Cole's tooth went right to JR's bone of his hand.
Ooh, that's not good.
And so it's apparently it dug that deep, so that can't be good. But I think that this country whipping match, I think JR will still be okay for that. As far as I understand, it's just I think they just whip each other with leather straps. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be a farce.
We are then backstage with Scott Stanford, who's with Cena and The Miz.
No, just The Miz.
Oh, just The Miz.
Yeah, it was just The Miz.
Oh, why didn't I write that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Miz says he will find a way to win this Sunday in his cage match versus Cena and Morrison. And he says, well, actually, James.
We got a clip, don't we?
Yeah, let me pull that up here.
Check it out.
Here we go.
Every single network executive at USA should be on their knees praying to the high heavens that I don't get drafted to SmackDown. Because if I do, Monday Night Raw, within 1 month, will be canceled. And that is a guarantee.
You gotta like that.
I got a good laugh out of that.
Miz claiming that Raw will be shut down if he is taken off the show.
He's such a good heel, I think.
Oh, I agree. I think he's excellent. I mean, they recognize that. Obviously, he's the champion. But yeah. Just a line like that is just
awesome.
That's
funny.
He says everything that you should never say as a human being. Like, he's as cocky gets.
Yeah.
And it works. It totally works. We then get to Randy Orton versus Dolph Ziggler, and this is for two draft picks, apparently, and Orton is representing SmackDown, of course, Dolph Ziggler with his new look, and one note worth mentioning in this match is that Orton doing the angle slam.
Yeah. Well, here's my issue with this is you just drafted Orton, and now he's wrestling for the brand?
Yeah, that again makes...
You know, that
this is the problem with the show. I have a huge issue with this draft with some of the ways they broadcast the show. The draft could be awesome. Number one, I think if you're going to do a draft, the draft picks should be legitimately random.
That's right.
You should legitimately go into the match, wrestle the match, you have your winner, and when you have a random draft pick, it's literally random. There's no way of writing that because that would make this show so much better.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, I agree. It's got to be randomized like that, but no, it's not. It's all pre-booked and it's all done at the last second. It seems like so.
And that could be such a great feature for this draft.
Yeah.
Really randomize it, even where the wrestlers don't realize.
Yeah.
You know, like have no one know, not even Vince, and you deal with the cards that are dealt after the show's over.
Do you really think they can work it that way, though?
Why not? Why can't they? Like when they do those Cyber Sunday shows, why can they not be random?
Well, even when they did those Cyber Sunday shows, they had stuff pre-booked for each choice.
I get you can have pre-booked, but why can you not come out with a legitimately random scenario where they're forced to think of it on the fly? To me, that takes the allure of Cyber Sunday or the WWE draft completely away from me. Like, I'm not interested in something that they've written up. And this show, to me, just proves how the whole draft is thought up. They think of it at the last minute, they throw it together, and they obviously pre-write the whole thing. And to me, that is just super frustrating.
Well, I think they've been doing that a lot lately. But
well, of course, but this is a perfect opportunity to gain, you know, some momentum coming out of WrestleMania. And in, to me, that is a massive reason as to why they've dropped the ball with this draft.
Yeah.
So, in this match, we ended up, Orton ends up winning with the RKO.
Yeah, Orton goes over with the RKO. So it's another two draft picks for SmackDown, who seems to be really, they seem to be on the top.
But what's funny is that before we can even get to our first draft pick, CM Punk interrupts, and here's what he has to say.
Come on, AD, let's go! Christian,
make that tag, do it for SmackDown.
Come on, Miz! And here comes Friday Night SmackDown's John Cena.
There's a big tackle delivered by John Cena.
Oh, Miz, oh, no!
Oh, here we go.
That was
obviously okay. That's obviously not it.
I pulled up the wrong clip.
A little bit of technical difficulties, folks. But that's all right.
I'll get to this in a second. Let me stop this again. CM Punk interrupts, and he interrupts a draft pick. Maybe I've written this down wrong. I'm saying Orton says he's the last man standing.
Essentially the whole thing, it turned out to be that it's just made a last man standing match now. So now every match at Extreme Rules coming up this Sunday is a gimmick match. Which
I see.
I don't know.
I got to get better at writing my notes.
But
so our first draft pick to SmackDown is Mark Henry. Woo. And that's what that clip is related to, and I'll play it again in a second. The other draft pick to SmackDown, which is very interesting, is Sin Cara.
Again, I picked that last week, didn't I?
You did. And why was your reasoning for him going again?
Well, just like what we touched on earlier in the show, where if you go over to SmackDown, you have that that nice little cushion of being able to have any botches that you do edited out, right? And
yeah, I think that's a perfect scenario for Sin Cara.
I totally agree. You know, just to get him polished up a little bit and get him a little bit more used to the North American wrestling style.
Yeah.
You know, I think going over to SmackDown will be really good for him.
And to me, that is why they brought Rey Mysterio back over to Raw.
That's
because
right.
They want to keep those two separate at this point. They don't want those guys going head-to-head because, let's be honest, James, that is a potential WrestleMania matchup.
Yeah, well, when I saw Sin Cara go over to SmackDown, that was the first thought that came into my head. It was basically a trade.
Yeah.
You know, Mysterio to Raw for Sin Cara to SmackDown, essentially, right?
Okay, so now would now be a good time to load up this clip?
No, I think that was for the end of the show.
Is it?
I think it was for the end of the segment.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that?
Yeah, I think you're right,
actually. Yeah, it's for the end of the segment.
I think you're right. So anyways, Mark Henry and Sin Cara to SmackDown. We then get to Wade Barrett versus Rey Mysterio. Another scenario where Rey Mysterio got drafted to Raw, and now he's representing Raw. Mysterio wins with the 619 and the top rope splash. And thanks for coming out, Barrett, again, as usual.
Here's my issue. You just had the United States champion and the Intercontinental champion both lose their respective matches.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter because these are for draft picks, so obviously their heart's not into it.
Well, doesn't that just kind of like piss on the
belt
a little bit?
Yeah, it does. It does. This whole show is, to me, a little bizarre. But so we have two draft picks.
Two draft picks to Raw. The first draft pick to Raw was the Big Show.
We've seen it before.
How many times has the Big Show? I think that guy moves every single draft. Every year he moves show to show.
He does. I'm pretty sure you're right.
He's been on every single brand multiple times.
Yeah.
You know? But anyways, the second draft pick was the interesting one, and that's Alberto Del Rio is now coming over to Raw, which I kind of saw happening.
This is very interesting because obviously he's in the spotlight these days, and they are pushing him to be the next big
heel. But he deserves it. I mean, the guy is solid. He's solid.
I do. I like him, and I think this is a huge move for him, and I think that
he's got it. He's like John Cena, you know?
I think we're about to see some awesome scenarios with him and different guys. You know, it's a shame that Cena went to SmackDown because I'd love to see Cena versus Del Rio in the near future. But
yeah,
we then come back from commercial with Cole back in the coal mine, and his face is all bruised, which is worth mentioning.
Yeah, like a big fat lip, and he was talking like this.
He looked pretty bad. He looked pretty beat up from his match against JR and Lawler there. And I don't know if it was makeup or what, but it did look pretty good. And they are doing a fantastic job with his angle, I think.
Yeah.
My only complaint is putting JR and Cole in the ring before Extreme Rules. I mean, that's the whole selling point to that pay-per-view. I don't know why you would put them in the ring on the Monday Night Raw heading into it, but
No, I agree with you. Anyways, moving on, Teddy Long then comes out and he announces the main event. Now, here's another issue I have. They didn't do anything with this draft with the GMs.
Well, like, what do you want them to do?
Well, I thought it would have been kind of cool if they maybe switched the GMs over shows. You know, Teddy Long comes over to Raw and the anonymous GM goes over to SmackDown.
Yeah.
You know, that to me could have maybe added a little bit new life into this anonymous GM angle, which they pretty much let go to crap, right?
Has the GMs... Yeah, the GMs have been drafted before, haven't they?
Oh, they always say that nobody is safe when it comes to the draft, right?
Yeah, that would have been an interesting scenario. That would have,
but none of that. Anyways, Teddy Long comes out, announces the main event, which is a six-man tag match for two draft picks. And on the Raw side, we have the heels, CM Punk, Alberto Del Rio, who just got drafted again, and The Miz, taking on the SmackDown side, the faces, Christian, Mark Henry, and John Cena.
This is where my clip comes in. I wrote it down.
There you go. Play the clip.
I'll be kicking that myself for that
one. Just play the clip.
Let's go.
Make that tag. Do it for SmackDown.
Come on, Miz. And here comes Friday Night SmackDown's John Cena.
Another big tackle delivered by John Cena.
Oh, Miz. Oh, no.
Oh, here we go.
Cool. Mark Henry just pulled on Cena.
So we have a new heel.
Yeah, we have a Mark Henry heel turn. That was kind of interesting. Came in and clotheslined John Cena as he was doing his, you know, familiar end spot.
Do you find it weird that R-Truth and Mark Henry in consecutive weeks have turned heel? Like, do you find that weird in any sort of way?
They have to do it, essentially, because the heel side on SmackDown is so bloody weak right now.
So... Who do you think will stand out as the standout heel on SmackDown? Who's going to be the guy?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. You know what? At this point, I have to say I don't know. It's either going to be Cody Rhodes or Drew McIntyre, it's looking like.
Think so?
Or Mark Henry's going to get the billionth push of his life, but...
And it'll be a big one, because they need something over there.
Yeah, I mean, the heels are weak right now.
So the one thing worth mentioning here to end the show is that Mark Henry turns heel.
Mark Henry turns heel. And the end of the match was Miz went over with the skull-crushing finale. Yeah,
over Cena for the win.
Well, yeah, went over Cena for the win, which was interesting.
Which gives Raw a draft pick. One final draft pick to end the show. And who is the final draft pick?
If you didn't see it, God, if you didn't see it. Da, 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 da. John Cena is drafted twice in the same show. Yes, you heard that right. Cena was drafted twice in the same show. They did that before, though. Triple H, though, a couple years
ago. God. So they draft him at the beginning of the show to SmackDown, and then they send him back over to Raw at the end.
But did you really think that Cena was going to go over to SmackDown, their number two show?
For a while, I thought that was actually probably a good idea, because I know how bad that show suffers right now, ratings-wise, and they need something. I thought if Cena went over to SmackDown, it didn't matter anyways, because you're going to see all these wrestlers on both brands at different times regardless. You think if Cena went to SmackDown, he wouldn't be on Raw?
No, I agree with you there.
Yes.
Oh, he'll be going back and forth, of course.
As with every wrestler, this whole draft to me doesn't... To me, it's not a huge deal anyways, because they're not going to stick to their respective brands.
No. Yeah, I agree with you. So anyways, as the show ends... Cena, after he's announced that he's drafted back to Raw, miraculously springs back to life after being pinned by his opponent's finisher and clears the ring, picks up The Miz, FUs him over, tried to FU him, or what do they call it now? The AA now, sorry.
Attitude adjustment.
Attitude adjustment, that's right. He tried to give him an attitude adjustment and he threw him over the top onto the other heels, and Raw ends off with Cena standing tall for the billionth freaking time.
So let's just quickly go over the results of the draft. I'm just going to run them down here. Daniel Bryan goes from Raw to SmackDown.
This is the supplemental draft that happened the next day.
Oh, I think this is all of them, actually. Those are the draft picks that happened on Raw. Now, the next day on WWE.com, they had a supplemental draft.
They do this every year.
And it started at 9 a.m., and you log into WWE.com, and you watch the video, or you watch for the updates, and here it was. Daniel Bryan goes from Raw to SmackDown. Jack Swagger goes from SmackDown to Raw, which I gotta like. I think Jack Swagger should be there. Again, he's been on both shows anyways. Kind of defeats the purpose, but I do think he'll do more things on Raw.
Yeah, he's been on both shows for like the last 2 months.
Great Khali and Ranjan Singh go from Raw to SmackDown. Jimmy Uso goes from Raw to SmackDown. Woo! Kelly goes from SmackDown to Raw. Woo! JTG goes from SmackDown to Raw.
Yeah!
Alicia Fox goes from Raw to SmackDown. William Regal goes from Raw to SmackDown. Woo! Yoshitatsu in the main event blockbuster deal of the night goes from Raw to SmackDown. Drew McIntyre goes from SmackDown to Raw. Natalya goes from Raw to SmackDown.
We haven't seen her very much lately, have we?
Yeah, Kurt Hawkins goes from SmackDown to Raw. Chris Masters goes from SmackDown to Raw.
Woo!
Jey Uso goes from Raw to SmackDown. Woo! Kofi Kingston, which is interesting, goes from SmackDown to Raw.
Oh.
Ted DiBiase goes from Raw to SmackDown. Tyson Kidd goes from Raw to SmackDown. Tamina goes from Raw to SmackDown. Tyler Rex goes from SmackDown to Raw. Alex Riley, which is an interesting note, goes from Raw to SmackDown, splitting up him and The Miz. Beth Phoenix goes from SmackDown to Raw. And Sheamus.
Oh, you got it.
Goes from Raw to SmackDown. You got your pick. I got my pick in the end. So, James, that was Tale of the Tape. Now is a good time to remind everyone that you can email us anytime before, during, and after the show at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. And if it's any good, we'll put it on the air.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
Okay, so if you didn't know, this Sunday coming up, WWE's having their Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So with that in mind, our poll question this week is going to be, which match are you most excited for at the upcoming Extreme Rules pay-per-view? Is it the Rey Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes match where it's Falls Count Anywhere? Is it Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler versus Michael Cole and Jack Swagger in a country whipping match? Is it Randy Orton versus CM Punk in a last man standing match? Is it Christian versus Del Rio in a ladder match for the World Heavyweight Championship? Or is it the main event, Morrison versus John Cena versus The Miz in a steel cage match for the WWE Championship?
And of course, everyone, if you want to take part, you can log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote, and we'll release the answers at the end of the show.
Perfect. So anyways, coming up on the show here later on, we're just going to cut to a quick commercial break here, folks, but coming up, we're going to preview ECCW's Chamber of Extreme show, which is coming up tomorrow night. We're also going to have tonight's top five, always fun, and the post-to-post report is coming up next.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
Okay, James, the post-to-post report, as always, a weekly look into the news of the business.
This is one of my favorite segments, that's for sure.
And I love the name.
Post-to-post.
It's so good. How can you not like it?
One post to the other.
All right, James, let's get into it right away. Batista's deal with Strikeforce fell through.
Oh, wow.
TMZ cameras caught up with Dave Batista this past weekend and asked for an update to his negotiations with himself and MMA promotion Strikeforce. Batista claimed that the entire deal fell through when Strikeforce was bought out by rival UFC and now has no involvement with the organization.
Huh.
He was rumored to have been negotiating his first fight to be with Strikeforce and was really disappointed to learn about the news.
No kidding.
I think with Batista, his money is in the WWE. I mean, there's no secret. That's where his talents have lied. Are you actually going to go and start all over again and build your way up and build this MMA career?
Well, I was kind of interested to see how he was going to do
it. Well, so was I, but now he's back to square one all over again.
Well, you don't think the WWE would let him back? You don't think
Vince McMahon? I think it's an open door. He can go back at any time.
Me too.
And I would love to see a Batista versus Mason Ryan feud.
That would be...
I would love to see that.
That'd be kind of like Dolph Ziggler versus Evan Bourne. You got like the two clones going at each other.
But this Strikeforce deal falling through is bad news for us seeing Batista... in these promotions, actually fighting. Yeah. I was interested to see him versus Bobby Lashley. That was a rumored matchup. And now that's not going to happen.
That would have drew huge numbers.
I don't know. We'll see. I think, again, his best talents lie in the WWE. Chris Jericho, in our weekly Chris Jericho update, eliminated from Dancing with the Stars.
No!
After scoring the lowest score on ABC's Dancing with the Stars this past Monday, Chris Jericho and partner Cheryl Burke were eliminated from the competition the next night. Chris and Cheryl were the fifth dancing duo eliminated and lasted 6 weeks on the show. Since his elimination, though, Chris has tweeted, "For the first time in 8 weeks, I don't have dance rehearsals. What am I going to do with myself now? Anything going on in Tampa this weekend?" And that's worth noting because WWE Extreme Rules, the pay-per-view, happens this weekend from Tampa, Florida.
There's rumors flying around that he's going to make an appearance, I think.
There's rumors that he's going to make his return.
He always return? I thought it was just an appearance.
Well, it could be, because here's the one thing. Chris Jericho lives in the area.
Oh, that's true.
So no one understands. It's a perfect tweet from Chris Jericho. Yeah. And that's why that is where I like Twitter being used. You know, you're hyping up, you're teasing with a line on Twitter.
I don't use Twitter.
No, neither do I. But what I'm saying is that's a perfect scenario as to when you should use it. Oh, I agree.
Yeah. It kind of builds up the suspense and the heat a little bit, right?
Now, here's a very interesting note, James. And this is a very interesting note. TNA, we don't talk a lot about TNA, but I figured this would be a good opportunity.
For good reason.
TNA and Desmond Wolfe are in a scary predicament.
Oh, this is scary.
In a blog post by Randy Ritchie, a former production manager for TNA, Randy has claimed that Desmond Wolfe has not been wrestling in recent months, and it's because he has hepatitis C, a viral disease that leads to inflammation of the liver. Ooh. Wolfe last wrestled for the organization in August. He and Magnus were scheduled to receive a shot at the TNA World Tag Team Championship against the Motor City Machine Guns at the No Surrender pay-per-view. But they were pulled from the event at the last minute, with TNA citing a personal issue as the reason. It was later reported that Wolfe was pulled from the event due to an undisclosed medical situation that would sideline him indefinitely.
That is, you know, hepatitis C is not a fun thing.
And this is also on the news that Abdullah the Butcher had possibly infected someone with hepatitis C. After the weekend of his Hall of Fame induction ceremony, there was a documentary that was released.
I remember that
of a man who was trying to make a career in professional wrestling, and it fell short because he ended up contracting allegedly hepatitis C from Abdullah the Butcher in a match.
That is such a scary thing.
And this is quite a scary predicament for the TNA, because this could be a very big legal battle.
Oh, this could be huge.
And this could be opening the doors for, you know, you need to have a ton of medical tests clear before you can actually wrestle either TNA or the WWE.
And TNA, as you know, they have, you know, busted open spots a lot more than WWE does.
Absolutely.
So it's a scary thing, man. Hep C is not a fun...
In an update to the story, Randy Ritchie has also reported that a sexual harassment lawsuit has also been filed against TNA. Ooh. Specifics have yet to be disclosed, but Terry Taylor, director of TNA Talent Relations, was allegedly named in the suit. Now, there has been some conflicting reports to this story, as the Honky Tonk Man, whose real name is Roy Wayne Ferris, posted on his Facebook page and podcast that Kurt Angle's ex-wife, now Jeff Jarrett's wife, Karen Angle, is the alleged victim in this matter. Oh, Honky Tonk Man claims that Karen was sexually harassed in some capacity by Dixie Carter's husband, Sarge. Now, at this point, details are vague, and nothing has been confirmed by anyone, and details are sure to emerge in the next little while, but definitely another black eye for the TNA.
Now you know why we don't talk about them that much.
These are two legal battles that are just potential to be explosive.
Vince, where are you? Come in and buy this thing out. Make it better.
Those are two battles that are going to leave such a bad mark on the organization. And if you're Spike TV and you're seeing this, you've got to be rethinking your whole marketing.
No kidding. Campaign. Are you going to really renew these guys when contract time comes up?
It's going to be very interesting how these two lawsuits pan out. And Who knows? It could be the start of a hell of a lot more going on.
Yeah, so TNA is in some hot water at the moment.
Now, in an update on the WWE cable network, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, the planned WWE cable network is a major piece of the puzzle in the recent company rebranding that is taking place. The idea is that the network will not be a pro wrestling channel, but rather more entertainment-oriented. WWE is looking to air scripted programming and other programming that they can use their marketing concepts with. This would include marketing the characters and even touring with the new shows. The Harlem Globetrotters would be a perfect example that fit this new concept. Hmm. Now, the WWE is looking at people such as Drew Carey for coming up with programming ideas. Now, wrestling footage would still air on the WWE cable network, but it would not be 100% of the content. This is very interesting to me because we just witnessed Oprah launch her own network, and the WWE is about to follow that same road. So not only do they have to come out with content for 24-hour periods, but it's got to be done in a way that you're going to make people order the channel.
Yeah.
So I think they're possibly going the right route here. There's no way you can just show wrestling 24/7.
No, I agree with you.
People aren't going to watch it, and it'll get old very fast. Now, if you've watched Tough Enough, you've noticed that this is kind of like a modern-day reality show. And I actually think they've probably done a pretty good job of it. Much better than they did with the old Tough Enough.
Oh, yes. This new Tough Enough is actually really good.
And this is the path that they're going. They're going to be showing more of these shows that are entertainment-oriented, where it's not actual, you know, you're not watching live events. You're watching programming that they've made around the live events.
Right.
And I think it's a smart move. It depends what kind of content they're going to put on. Like, if you're going to air a Snooki spinoff show on the WWE network,
nope.
I'm not going to watch it.
You're not going to get my money, that's for sure.
Now, here's another little interesting rumor. CM Punk is rumored to be on his way out with the WWE.
Oh, say it ain't so.
While this is just a rumor at this point, CM Punk has been relaying the idea that he will not be re-signing with the WWE when his contract expires in a few months. There's an apparent offer on the table from the WWE, but CM Punk is said to be burnt out from all the road travel and is said to be unhappy with his position in the company for the past year.
Do you think this is maybe just him trying to leverage a little bit when the contract renewal comes up?
I see it lots. I remember when Chris Jericho was renegotiating a contract, those rumors were flying. When Jeff Hardy's contract was expiring,
those rumors were flying.
Yes, absolutely. This is leverage.
CM Punk's no dummy. He knows that right now the WWE needs him. He is one of the most solid guys that they have on their roster, hands down.
And in contrast to that, so is Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is extremely smart, and I think Vince has proved to many people many times that no one is as important as they think they are.
Oh, yeah.
So, in my opinion, CM Punk needs to watch what he's telling people. But yes, it is a leverage tactic, and it probably will work, because I can't see Vince at a time where they're so desperate for stars.
Yeah.
I can't see them not wanting to re-sign
CM Punk. In my opinion, it's definitely in WWE's best interest to get him re-signed, get him on another contract.
But again, something that is worth noting here is that a lot of wrestlers these days are complaining about the strenuous road schedule. I mean, these guys are working 300 days a year or something like that on the road, wrestling every other night, you know, flying from city to city. They're living a lifestyle that can catch up to you big time.
Yeah.
One of the big arguments with this whole scenario is CM Punk is saying, I'm burnt out. I don't want to be on the road that much. And, you know, you bring in the whole argument of, well, there's no off season in the WWE. Every professional sports organization has an off season. WWE doesn't have an off season. These guys are literally working every single day of the year, putting their bodies on the line. I mean,
it burns them out. Well, here's what I think they should do. They should have like a rotating off season for different guys.
I agree with you.
Have a match for a guy where he gets beat up or bloodied or not bloody, but you know what I mean. He puts somebody over real well, and then we don't see him for 3 months.
I don't see why we can't announce an actual off season in wrestling. Why can you not announce that?
I disagree with that. I think they have to have a show coming out every week, but don't use the same guys all the time.
Yeah, you could. It would open up the door for new talent.
Push a guy. Yeah, give one guy 3 months off, and then push somebody else who's up and coming.
I would be very interested to see if other wrestlers will join in on this tactic that CM Punk is using, because right now the WWE is so hard up for superstars. If other guys that are close to renegotiating the contract came into the mix and said, yes, this is a good time to say to everyone, we can't work this many days a year, I'd be interested to see how Vince responds to that. Anyways, the WWE today held their annual stockholder meeting this morning at 10 a.m. for stockholders as of March 4th, and the conference was a little more interesting than usual. WWE stock price, James, I don't know if you know this, but it dropped over a dollar and by nearly 10% in after-hours trading on Thursday evening. The stock reached a 52-week low of $10.37 a share. As of right now, I checked, the stock price is actually at $10.51, so it has bounced up like 14 cents. But still, to drop a dollar in a day, that's, is a huge thing.
Yeah, if you guys don't know how the stock market works, dropping a dollar
can be massive.
It's huge.
Now, in the meeting, Vince McMahon answered questions from shareholders, and when he was asked whether he'll consider buying out TNA,
Please do.
Vince replied, I don't know that they're for sale. And then he kind of added at the end, maybe.
I think he should.
That's an interesting answer for sure.
Oh, I mean, TNA is such a freaking train wreck right now. It's I don't watch their show because it's such a train wreck.
I don't know if Vince buying the TNA is the answer, but it was an interesting question for sure. Vince also said they plan to roll out the new TV programs through various distribution methods and said they're looking to monetize in-ring live content for distribution through the likes of Amazon, Google, and Netflix. To me, James, that just says they are looking for other avenues to make money with their content because what they have isn't working. I think it's a smart idea. I mean, Netflix is growing. Amazon's always been there. Google's growing. There's definitely potential to make money with their video through other methods. So that's basically what he's...
No, I'll give Vince credit there. He's always been good at staying up with the times and incorporating new ideas to try to get his product across, right?
And then he finally added at the end, and we've already talked about this, but that the WWE TV network is roughly 12 to 18 months away from launching, and it would be launched under a traditional model such as cable or satellite, or they might try something new such as Google or Netflix to launch this channel. They might not even put it on TV at all.
That would actually be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so I think they're sort of looking, they're shopping it around at this point, but he's basically saying that this all WWE TV network is roughly 12 to 18 months away. Let's get into the financials here quickly. The current stock price was $11.60 a share a couple days ago.
Jeez.
Now it's $10.51 a share, so it has dropped. It is bad. Now, the show ratings for the April 25th Raw, the Raw we just went over, that was a 3.5 rating. It was actually up from last week's 3.12.
Oh, so my prediction didn't come true.
Saying what?
I said that the number was going to continue going down, but it looks like I was wrong.
No, it went up. The draft did spark a little interest.
Yeah, probably because it was the draft.
Viewership increased from 4.7 million to 5.2. Now, just as a comparison, just throwing it out here, the April 21st episode of TNA Impact scored a 1.17 rating, and that's up from the 1.14 from the week before.
Man.
So Raw's ratings are in the 3.5s, TNA's is in 1.17. Now SmackDown has a 1.89 rating, so SmackDown's really not doing that much better than TNA. 1.89 to a 1.7, you know, they are kind of catching up, but...
Now, for those of you who don't know, when you say where you're giving out numbers like 1.89 and 1.17, that's millions of people watching, right?
No, that's not. That's not what.
Oh.
No, that's, they have a rating system that is designed up, and it's a formula that I can't say. I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
But those
so
numbers
I'm wrong.
Are representative. No, yeah. Those numbers are representing certain houses per population. There's a whole formula that they have.
Oh, okay.
But what they usually post is a rating, rating, and then they show viewership. So, like when I say SmackDown had a 1.89 rating for their April 22nd show, it actually means their viewership were at 2.8 million viewers. So, some way, 2.8 million viewers translate into a 1.98 or 1.89 rating. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they do it, but there is a formula.
Huh.
And just as a comparison, Tough Enough had a 1.73 rating, and that's up from a series low 1.54 last week. So, interesting news, definitely on the news front. You know, this week in the WWE, James, there's a lot of people are wondering what's going on and. I don't know.
It's an interesting shareholders meeting. I mean, your stock.
I find it's more interesting to see the financial side of things than it is to see the actual show these days.
It's not good when your stock's going down by a dollar.
No. So, folks, we're gonna take a little break here. But next on the local wrestling scene, we are going to run down ECCW's Chamber of Extreme show.
That should be good.
Which is actually happening tonight, James. We're going
tonight?
To it.
Was it tonight or was it tomorrow?
No, it's tonight.
Oh, you know what? I apologize, folks. It's tonight.
And also, tonight's top five. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my Todd. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from. Made the Yankee hat more famous than the Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of walking with my click.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, James, the local wrestling scene, still my favorite segment of the show.
Do you like the local wrestling scene? I like the poster boy.
It is a good segment. It's where we run down the local wrestling scene in the Pacific Northwest, and you know, tonight we're gonna talk about ECCW Chamber of Extreme. That's happening tonight in Surrey. But you know, this segment will be expanded upon along the way. We hope to talk to Alberta, we hope to talk to Oregon, we hope to talk to California.
We're gonna do what we can, everybody.
We're gonna do what we can and bring everyone who wants to be involved into the mix. But of course, we're gonna start in Vancouver. So tonight, James, ECCW is presenting Chamber of Extreme.
That should be good.
And you don't know what a Chamber of Extreme is, do you?
You got me there, buddy.
And that's the allure of it. No one knows what the Chamber of Extreme is. They did actually post an interview with El Fantasmo, who is in the main event. Oh. It's El Fantasmo versus Scotty Mac in the main event, and they are going to be wrestling in the Chamber of Extreme. They did post an interview with El Fantasmo on the website, ECCW.com, of course. And one thing that's funny is that, well, one thing that you probably don't realize is that this match, Scotty Mac versus El Fantasmo, is a career ender, possibly, for El Fantasmo.
I was actually just going to mention that, but right? You beat me to it.
Because if he doesn't beat Scotty Mac, he's out of here. And in the interview, he actually announces that the Chamber of Extreme will be it'll be 8 feet high, sides of steel along, you know, on the outside of the ring with barbed wire on the top, and there will be weapons laid out everywhere.
Jeez, I'm excited now.
It should be very interesting.
Oh, boy. And, of course, next week on our local wrestling segment, we'll have a whole review of the show for you. We'll go over the card and we'll go over the results.
Yeah. In fact, after this show, after we're done recording this,
we're actually out of here and we're on the way to the show.
Yeah. So another interesting matchup that is coming up tonight at Chamber of Extreme is the NWA ECCW Canadian champion, Tony Baroni. He's taking on Pete Powers.
That should be a good match.
What do you think of Tony Baroni so far as champion?
I think he's been a real good champion. He's one of these guys in the ECCW that I really could see going far, even past ECCW.
Mm-hmm.
I could actually see him getting a tryout in the big leagues.
He's always been excellent on the mic.
He just needs a little bit more size. If you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
because WWE, they're stupid sticklers for that kind of thing.
But he definitely has the talent, and I'm looking forward to seeing his reign as champion.
He's got the talent. He's got a look. He's got the mic skills,
and hopefully, charisma. And hopefully this championship belt brings the exposure that he needs to be seen.
Oh, definitely.
He's taking on Pete Powers. I'm thinking that is going to be an easy decision.
Should be an easy
but
victory.
We'll see. You know, anything can happen in the ECCW. We also have a NWA Canadian Junior Heavyweight Championship. Artemis Spencer, who's the champion, is taking on Stalin Smith.
Stalin Smith. I like Stalin Smith.
Why? Why do you like him so much?
He's I don't know. I don't know why I like him. He's got a good look. Yeah. I like guys with good looks, I guess. He's big. He's juice monkey. I don't know. I like the guys with the good look.
And in an interesting matchup on the night, in the most bizarre matchup of the evening, I should say, Veronica Vice will take on Tennille Taylor, and The Natural will be handcuffed to the ring post.
Oh, that should be...
That'll be... I'm sure there'll be lots of fun with that.
That should be interesting, yes.
Natural is always good for a couple moments.
He's good for a laugh.
Yeah. Or three. And finally, Rick the Weapon X is taking on Jason Sullivan, I believe, in the show opener. That should be an interesting match as well.
It's going to be an exciting show. And like I said before, we're going to have a full review for you next week on the local wrestling scene.
All right, folks. This is coming up to our weekly segment, tonight's Top 5. And we're going to take a little commercial break here. But when we come back, once again, tonight's Top 5.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's Top 5.
All right, this is tonight's Top 5. This is another cool segment I think we have on the show.
I think this is going to be one of the most popular segments by far.
So, with Extreme Rules coming up this Sunday, we thought we'd do a kind of an extreme-themed top five. So tonight's top five is the top five most extreme moments in WWE history.
Should be good.
Let's go with number five. Number five, Mankind gets his head caved in. And for this, we're going to go back to January 24th, 1999, which at the Royal Rumble, where Mick Foley, who was then Mankind, was facing off against The Rock in an I Quit match. And in one of the most brutal bouts in WWE history, this 20-minute brawl saw Mick Foley take 11
crazy
unprotected chair shots to his head with his hands cuffed behind his back. I mean, that's just something you'll never see nowadays.
No, never.
But The Rock eventually won the match using a pre-recording of Foley saying he quit.
I remember watching this match live. I ordered this pay-per-view, and it was awesome. It was... just the amount of chair shots that Mankind had taken to the head from The Rock, you thought the guy was literally going to be taken out on a stretcher.
Oh, geez, I thought his brains were mashed.
Oh, it was nuts. Number four, Rikishi taking the plunge at Armageddon, December 10th, 2000, in a six-man Hell in a Cell for the WWE Championship. In what was still the only Hell in a Cell match to feature six competitors, Steve Austin, Triple H, Undertaker, Rikishi, The Rock, and the champion, Kurt Angle, Rikishi, took a nasty plunge off the top of the cage after being chokeslammed by The Undertaker onto a waiting truck below. It was pretty sick, James.
Kurt Angle actually ended up retaining the title in that match. But that brings us to number three, Mick Foley plays with fire. WrestleMania 22, April 6th, 2006. I think a lot of people remember this hardcore match. And it was a classic hardcore match between these two great competitors. They stole the show after Edge speared Mick Foley off the apron into a flaming table.
Crazy.
Again, another spot that you'd never see nowadays in the PG era.
No. I remember at one point throughout this match, they sprayed, Edge sprayed gasoline on Mankind.
It was lighter fluid, but yeah.
Was it lighter fluid?
Lighter fluid, yeah.
Flammable regardless.
Same thing. But,
and you thought he was going to light him up on fire. I mean, it was a great hardcore match.
Honestly, I think that match kind of stole the card. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, it was a good match. They had there was, at the time, the hardcore era was definitely shining through.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they had just bought ECW, or no. What year did they buy ECW?
I think it was the year before. I think it was 2005.
Because I remember the hardcore division.
I'm not
100%
sure. I remember
the hardcore
say.
Yeah, I remember the hardcore division around this time was like right in the spotlight, and they were pushing hardcore matches all the time. And for the most part, they were all terrible. You know, it was like you go in the ring, you go backstage, you use whatever you could find, and the match was over. So I remember I was skeptical at the time I watched this match, but they really delivered in the end.
Yeah, it was good.
Shane O'Mac, Suicide Wish, Backlash, April 29th, 2001, in a last man standing. Nobody puts their body on the line in a match like Shane McMahon. In his infamous last man standing match with the Big Show, Shane won the bout after plunging more than 50 feet off the Titantron scaffolding onto his opponent, rendering him unable to answer the 10 count.
Oh my god. This pay-per-view is one that I actually bought live, and I remember watching this spot, and I thought Shane McMahon had died. I thought we had seen somebody die right before our eyes, you know, and it was...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was sick. But that brings us to the coveted number one spot.
It's over. That cage is 16 feet high.
Oh, that's it. That was it. That was the clip.
Yeah, our number one spot, Mankind. He proves he is the king of extreme at King of the Ring, June 28th, 1998, in the infamous Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker. I mean, in what was probably the most iconic spot in WWE history, Mick Foley, again then Mankind, was facing The Undertaker in this Hell in a Cell match when near the middle of the match, Foley was literally tossed off the top of the cage and came crashing down through a waiting announce table below. This clip, I think, is one of the most viewed in WWE history. And it
absolutely.
Just, and it solidified Mick Foley as a hardcore legend.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the all-time stunning clips that the WWE has. Mankind, Mick Foley, literally putting his body on the line that day.
Oh, geez, broken in half.
Like, it was nuts. I couldn't get over how well that spot looked. He took it perfectly. I'm pretty sure he was okay after. I don't know.
He took that bump perfectly. When you look back at it again, I mean, he couldn't have landed any more perfectly.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But it was good. It was good and sick.
So our poll question results, folks. Just to head back from our poll question earlier in the show, which match are you most excited for at Extreme Rules? 33% of you are saying John Morrison versus John Cena and The Miz in the steel cage match for the WWE Championship.
Well, that should be a good one. Personally, I would have voted for CM Punk Randy Orton, but that's just me.
I've already seen it. I don't want to see it again. I just saw it at WrestleMania. So, James, quick, let's go over our predictions here at Extreme Rules. It happens this Sunday. Who are you going with, Rey Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes? Give them to me quick.
Well, I'm going with Rey Mysterio.
I will be going with Cody Rhodes. Jim Ross and Lawler versus Michael Cole and Jack Swagger in a country whipping match.
Oh, God, come on. It's going to be Lawler and Ross.
Randy Orton versus CM Punk?
I'd like to say CM Punk, but I think it's going to be Orton.
And Christian versus Alberto Del Rio in a ladder match.
Ooh, see, that's the tough one. That's the one I think that you really can't predict. And honestly, I think I'd like to see Christian win.
Well, that's going to be interesting because definitely Alberto Del Rio is on his way to Raw. Does he bring the heavyweight championship with him? Does The Miz?
Will there be two straps on one show?
Exactly. And finally, Morrison, Cena, and The Miz in the steel cage match. Who are you going with?
I think Miz retains.
All right, folks. That's it. We will see you next week.